Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So welcome. We have a very special episode today of the media pod Atladottir and Bjurvald. We have two very prominent Russian journalists here in the studio today. Would you please like to introduce yourselves? We always do this with our guests, and it's extra good today now that you have Russian names so that I don't pronounce it incorrect. Please start.
My name is too Russian because I'm Victoria.
Yes.
But my last name is quite Russian. I'm Victoria Ivleva, mm-hmm. and I'm a freelance journalist and photographer, and recently volunteer in Ukraine, which I'm very proud of. Mm-hmm. This is it.
Yeah. Welcome, Victoria.
Thank you.
My name is Nadezhda Zhgikhina. I am Vice President of European Federation of Journalists and Executive Secretary of Russian Union of Journalists. Working as a journalist during all my life, and I hope I'm still a journalist.
Yes. And I read in your presentation, because you are here in Stockholm to take part in a seminar on press freedom at the Cultural House in Stockholm, that you have written about 20 books on journalism and equality. Is this correct?
Yes, I edited, collected and wrote something myself on gender equality, human rights, media freedom and culture partly, mm-hmm. and a couple of things about Swedish women and Swedish experience of gender equality.
Yeah, it's very interesting to have been written about. We'll see if we have time to talk about your verdict on Swedish women and equality. But let's first talk about the reason why you're here. You're here to discuss press freedom in Russia. And I know this is a topic that our listeners follow, but could you please just give a bit of a general picture of the situation for journalists today in Putin's Russia, please?
Sad. Mm. The first word that comes to my mind. Difficult. Heroic, in a way. That would be it to start with.
Why heroic?
Because it's difficult to tell the truth. And lots of people are getting threats, and women especially. And even if you're not getting threats, it's getting more and more difficult just to be yourself, mm-hmm. and just to tell what, to say what you think and to write what you want to write, because there's a kind of an inner censorship, not an official censorship, but something that is inside each of you, and you should use all of your audacity, all of your free will to continue.
Mm. The inner censorship is something we've discussed in this podcast before. We have a problem in Sweden with the internet hatred, which is particularly aimed at women. And this is also a reason why some women just feel they cannot go on any longer to write, because they do know that if they choose some topics, the hatred will come immediately. But I think it will still surprise some of our listeners that women are particular targets in Russia, because there is a general picture that it's so bad for press freedom in Russia that no one has really acknowledged that there may be a difference between the sexes, at least not in Swedish media. Tell us, why are Russian women, female journalists, more under threat than men?
Because physically we are more feeble all over the world. And it's mentally, I think, it's easier to think of an attacking a woman than attacking a man, if we talk about physical threats. And the other reason is that there are much more women in Russian journalism than, I don't know the situation in Sweden, but definitely much more women than men. And this situation changed within the time I'm in journalism, because me and Nadezhda, we were at the same journalism school at Moscow University and on the same level. Nadia was 1 year higher. And in our times, I'm so old now, I could talk about our times.
No, but yeah. Please tell us about what time so the listeners...
30 years ago. 25 years ago. In our times, there was more men the students were more men than women. And now it was probably, no, you tell me, it was probably 70% of men and 30%
no,
of women.
No, I can follow, because really when we started and when I started my professional career in a national youth newspaper, quite progressive and liberal-minded at that time, we had the half and half men and women. And
probably,
of course, all of chief and the department chief used to be males. And it looked naturally. Now we have 80% of all media workers for male. And some chief editors and even owners, more than 20% on the national level, on the regional and local level, much more, because men leave this field because of low payment, strong responsibilities, threats. They live for more lucrative positions in politics and business. But I would like to add first about press freedom, because I do remember this time when we were studying in the Moscow State University and when we started our professional career, press freedom was an impetuous desire. It was a dream of generations of Russian intellectuals. And then perestroika started. Many young people, and not only young people, all liberal-minded intellectuals participated, and it became a gift from the heaven. During Gorbachev time, we got this press freedom, we got this fantastic legislation, which is still actual legislation on media activities on press freedom in Russia. It was like a gift, and we had no any idea that it should be protected, that it's hard everyday job. It was our frustration. Press freedom was, as an idea, deep frustration for many when first oligarchs, then power structures began to conquer media field. There is no transparent market. There is no open and transparent competition. There are different threats and restrictions started not today, started with 9/11 and war on terror. First so-called information doctrine of Russian media appeared just after this tragedy. And now we face lots of different restrictions, some amendments to legislation, some regulations, which made this field of open discussion more and more rigid, may make it smaller. Mm-hmm. But I should say that we just started understanding that press freedom is our everyday job. It's our responsibility. And it's very sad to admit, but unfortunately, this situation in what we find ourselves today is in many ways is a result of our naivety, lack of solidarity, lack of professional organizations, lack of strategies how to protect our media freedom and other freedoms and integrity of ourselves. So, but I still, I should say that still now we have very interesting media experiences in Russia. We have really heroic, transparent, responsible, quality, ethical and interesting business companies. We have a number of really courageous and dedicated journalists, including young people, in many Russian cities and towns. And it gives me hope. I'm very proud of our professionals who do not want just to make money on their skills, but understand that journalism is a public good, that they work for people, for our development, for the future. And unfortunately, what I faced, that very few people in the West are aware of it, have any information about this. So that's why I think it's very important to establish professional gatherings, sharing experiences, meet face to face, and no more.
You've also said in an interview that the general public is painfully unaware that the threats against press freedom and against journalism is a national security issue. It's not just something that concerns our small industry or, you know, our private lives. It really is an issue of democracy and national security. How do you work to raise awareness of this issue in Russia?
just have discussions with the public, promote some events like media festivals, like some gatherings, some films, and just open discussions with people in the libraries, around newspapers, around different, in the education centers. But I should say that we lost a lot because people really do believe, many of them, that it's just business of people in media business. They make money, they divide something, it's not about themselves. And I think it's the main problem for very idea of freedom of expression in Russia.
Mm-hmm. I would like to add that I think during last years especially, the reputation of our profession in Russia, I don't know about Sweden, but in Russia it's gone down. And whenever you say that you're a journalist, the response is always, oh, you're going to lie something about us. And I think it's an image of a journalist that was probably created deliberately. I don't want to say by Kremlin journalist or by whom, but by some people at power, because then it's very easy to manipulate the general public if journalists are not trustworthy people all over the country. And of course, in Russia, as well as probably here, it's not the newspapers who are playing the leading role, it's the television, and the television is not free at all. So
it's a very interesting point. We do have the same problem here. It's our leading far-right party, the Sweden Democrats, are projecting this image of Swedish journalists as part of a great conspiracy lying to the people. And it's a conspiracy that's really taken hold because the great medium here is not TV, it's the internet and social media. Tell us a bit about internet and social media. How is it used in order to make press freedom stronger, to strengthen press freedom in Russia? Do you have any? I mean, I've read in an interview with you, Victoria, that you say that, or at least the journalist who interviews you says that you use Facebook as your own personal newspaper.
I think it's looked like my little personal newspaper because I have 11,500 followers. It is not that, probably it sounds much in Sweden, but it's not that much in Russia, so it's. And I write there nearly every day.
But it's so surprising to hear that journalism has become like this low-status, female-dominated profession in Russia because it's the absolute opposite here.
But is interesting, it's you know, when you come to somebody, the first reaction is, oh, you're going to lie about us. The next moment, they would open a newspaper, read an article about a person with three heads and believe it because it's not here, it's somewhere.
Yeah.
But what you're going to write about us will be all lie.
Yeah. So. But is it the same for, I have to ask you, is it the same like in all areas of journalism? Because in Sweden, the problem is mainly that you have some niches of journalism that are male dominated. Like investigative journalism is still a very macho area where it's difficult to get ahead as a female and so on. Or do you have like female domination in all areas of Russian journalism?
Let me add, first of all, we had totally male-dominated sections like high policy, politics, economy, investigation,
sports,
of course, military issues and so on. Mm. But with perestroika, I should say that Russian society was formally equal. Of course, it was very superficial. It was full of hypocrisy. And that's why many liberals, they hated idea of women's equality as a fake idea. It's important to understand why many Russian so-called progressive-minded people, they hated feminism when first feminists appeared in the Soviet Union during perestroika and later in Russia. They didn't want to accept this agenda. They accepted everything from the States, from Western Europe, except feminism, because feminism was associated with condemned Russian Soviet past, something dangerous for normal people, and neoliberal idea of Cinderella, girlfriend of a businessman, became the most popular. And at the same time, many women penetrated the profession in the 90s. And many women began to experience leadership. They established newspapers. It was extraordinary experience. It was a temptation. I should say that some of them established soft porn or hard porn newspapers because pornography was looked that time at like something fresh and liberal. It was prohibited.
Interesting, really interesting.
It's very important. Yeah. And that's why many women did and are promoting gender stereotypings. despite their positions in the media, they could be owners, they could oppress women journalists and didn't let them go to maternity leave, to take care of small children, underpay. It's a typical
They were just situation. So set on making this career and just establishing themselves that they just did not care about in any
Yes, and yeah. today the most prominent and well-known and awarded nationally and internationally journalists covering conflicts, human rights, top politics, economy, including military issues, they are women. They are well-respected. They are well-accepted. Not all of them are feminists by origin, not, and very few claim that they are close to feminist ideology. But at the same time, those women who raise their voices for human rights, for women's rights, for democracy, combating corruption and pressure of authorities, they face enormous, enormous response and hate online and open threats. Some of them have been killed. First woman who reported about threats for her, she was not a young girl. She was chief editor of Kalmyk regional newspaper, Советская Калмыкия сегодня, Лариса Юдина. She was criticizing leader, president of Kalmyk Republic. It was in the 90s because of his corruption and connections with criminology, criminals and so on. She was threatened many, many times. She was brutally beaten and killed.
And of course, Anna Politkovskaya, who is so well-known here.
Politkovskaya appeared later. Of course, she faced threats, many, many threats. She didn't pay attention to that. Many women do not pay attention to any threats until death threats.
Why is it so? What do you mean, like, don't pay attention? Do they ignore them? Are they just too scared? Do they think it's going to go...
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Idiotic. Yeah. I receive threats, but they all look idiotic. Mm-hmm. Like, you are a State Department agent. Okay, thank you very much. I never received a single dollar from the State Department.
No.
Or you are a bitch. Mm-hmm. Or you are responsible for the war in Ukraine. Or, you know, how would you react to this? Okay, keep on writing and mm-hmm. I keep on writing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Lots of threats look idiotic, just as if they're written by mental people, so you wouldn't pay attention.
But do you have any training? Because since you're active in the union, I think, do you have training courses for women?
We are very appreciated for our cooperation with Swedish colleagues and International Federation of Journalists. We had many trainings, including gender trainings, and I should say we introduced gender trainings into professional mid-career trainers. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it was more interesting for male journalists. But, you know, we did not have enough trainings in safety in general. No. Now we need it, but we have, unfortunately, not enough fundings and we do not have enough cooperation, so it's some practical stuff. But the problem is that Russian journalists used to face threats for decades.
So and this has become ingrained in the profession it's a part of everyday life?
If you're a serious journalist, it looks very strange if you never got any threats to your family, to your kids. But today it's more cruel, it's more brutal, especially
it's
for
like
women.
Society.
Threats, rape threats, rape threats to your kids, to your family. So people are becoming more aggressive in
general.
And
this is online or it's also physical or...
Mostly online.
Mostly it would be anonymous online.
Yeah.
You cannot define. But I should say that sometimes we have a couple of episodes when police investigated and found offenders and didn't put them to court, but had some prevention measures.
It's and the same in Sweden.
They were stopped.
But it was... I'm very surprised why people do not talk about it loudly, because there are some measures possible to do, especially in the small settlements. It's very difficult to find a person in Moscow in a big city. But in small settlement and small town, and I should say that women are most of chief editors and prominent journalists in small towns, and they are very trusted because they are close to people. It's very different situation from big cities because everything is very close. But threats in small places are more dangerous for journalists because your family, your house, your everyday life.
Yeah, everyone knows everyone in a small place.
So on, so it's the same. But tell me about convictions. Do you have a lot of convictions for this type of really violent internet hatred towards female journalists in
Russia? We have a line in our criminal code. It's a crime. But I do not remember any case when it was used. It's Russian problem. We have not bad legislation in many spheres, but
yeah, the laws are not that bad. The implementation.
Yes, but this is probably a worldwide problem.
It is.
Yeah,
yes.
The level is different.
Yeah,
but level of aggression in Russian society is very high.
Is unprecedented. I don't remember this level of aggression. Never in my life. Under Brezhnev times, it was just a quiet thing and swamp, and that was it. It was never like today. And
where is it coming from? I mean, because there's always been the suspicion in Sweden that some of it is orchestrated by the far right parties. They publish something on their websites about a particular journalist, and sometimes literally encouraging users to, you know, go out and seek out
the
this
most far right so party in Russia is probably the United Russia.
Yeah.
So this is where all the...
Well, there are some nationalistic, really dangerous groups. And, you know, sometimes people around religious centers, not official church, but some so-called activists.
Religious fanatists.
Fanatics, yes, they are really dangerous. They hate women on public sphere by origin. And I don't know that people who promote feminism and gender equality on TV, on radio, after every program, they face lots of threats and humiliation on the web.
How do the Russian female journalists go on?
There is one case I would like Nadia to talk about it. Would you tell the story of Yelena Milashina?
Yelena Milashina.
It's an incredible story.
Yelena Milashina is a well-known investigative journalist, just awarded
from Novaya
Gazeta. Award from Novaya Gazeta. She was covering Chechnya, forced marriages, honor killings, and so on. And she followed so-called marriage of millennium.
The case so-called in Chechnya, marriage of millennium.
Yeah. In Chechnya, one chief of local police unit visited...
57-year-old man.
57, married with adult children man, saw one teenage girl, just graduated from the school. And he said that he would like to marry her. Then journalist approached to him. He said that it was a joke and so on. But later on, he was supported by a leader of Chechnya. And they
by Kadyrov,
and they arranged this marriage. And girl's relatives complained on this man to Novaya Gazeta. Mm-hmm. They asked to protect her.
Yeah.
But after this scandal, after official support of leader of Chechnya, she said she would agree to marry, and there was a marriage. It was a discussion: was it fake? Because he was married already, and it's against Russian law.
It was horrible to look at her. She looked
It was a crime. It was abuse, child abuse, definitely. Mm-hmm. But our children's ombudsman originally started the case. Then he said it was national tradition, and women in Chechnya look very old and wrinkled after 27.
That's ridiculous. After
this is why they should be married at the age of 13.
Yeah.
And after that, by the way, feminists gave him anti-award of the worst sexist of the year.
Yes, that was probably well deserved.
Yelena Milashina followed the case.
Mm-hmm.
She went to the village
several times. Some people from authorities wanted not let her go to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he began to get threats, and after that he got threat on official webs. She got threat, death, not get death threat, but they reminded her destiny of Politkovskaya.
Well, this I would say is an official
associated with the government of Chechnya website. And after that, she complained to court, and everybody supported her, and we applied to OSCE and other institutions. And I know her. I asked her several times, why you didn't report about those threats until this horrible death threat? And she said that she didn't want. What for? It was not the case. And I think it's a problem. It's a deep psychological problem. Everybody do not pay attention to threats. But our monitors who monitor deaths and all violations of journalists' rights, they confirm that every tragedy, every beating, every death started with small intimidations and open threats and go on and go on. So we must pay attention to that. We must put it to public debate and to start this campaign against intimidation, because we have line on the legislation, but not only police doesn't want to deal with it, but even journalist organizations, media companies do not want to pay attention to that. Because
really, so what about a female journalist employee at a large media company in Russia would get this sort of severe threats? How would the employer react? What's the typical scenario? If she goes to the employer.
That would depend on the employer.
What's the usual?
The editing chief of Nova Gazeta, for example, as I worked there, of course, would try to do everything to protect.
Yeah, but that's like a small investigative.
But he was male.
He's a male.
But if you say like one of the bigger TV companies or one of the large newspapers.
I don't think that the big TV companies, they get any threats.
They do. Doesn't matter, you know. Mm. People get threats, doesn't matter what political focus they prefer. It happens. But usually I got complaints from right-wing women journalists. They got threats because fanatics and aggressive people are among all groups and everywhere. But I do not remember any case when big leader of big national company started campaign or did something. I do not remember. Probably they but I do not know.
Because, I mean, isn't this at the heart of press freedom as well, that the publishers are standing up for the employees and saying, we do not accept any threats towards our employees, we defend press freedom. If you have the weakening at the top, then I think fewer and fewer people are going to speak out about it. They hear the signal from the top saying, just keep quiet about it, just keep it under wraps.
It should be a culture in this media field in general. And the culture is very problematic. There is strong competition. We have unemployment or hidden unemployment, especially for those lucrative positions. And people faced threats, they prefer not report, not to make any noise, not to be laughed at. I know that it's the same picture was in Great Britain just now, and in Sweden just now, people began to take it serious. And the same with Russian media leaders, it's important to educate them. To discuss it,
but at the same time,
also this sort of a system in Russia when you try to solve those things sort of under the table by using your own relations, probably getting to those who are sending those threats, talking to them in a hidden way. You know, it's
not publicly,
and dealing with them, dealing with them in a way. It's a long, long, long tradition started in.
This seems like something you need to educate the journalists about. That you should go through the authorities. You should go through the police or through the courts. That seems
people
very risky.
The thing is that people don't trust the police.
No,
people don't trust the state, and the state doesn't trust the people.
No,
this is
but
the
it's
main
it's
reason.
You know, it's very general concept, because I know cases, exact cases, when people in government structures supported even journalists and people complaining, and police did their job. It happens. We shouldn't generalize everything. And I think we should promote step by step those cooperation. But what is important? Of course, I think it's universal. When journalists is well known as a person who complains on all chiefs, nobody will employ his or him. So it's a controversy.
It's a problematic person.
So it is important to help a person to resolve this issue, probably to help psychologically, because it's very traumatic, and for women it's much more traumatic than for men. And people around, they do not understand. It's important to create such environment in a working place, in a team, to support and not let it be again. Mm. And try to resolve it. So it's quite complicated. But unfortunately, gender awareness in Russia is very low. And the recent trends are associated with so strong patriarchal dynamics and patriarchal ideas and not ideas, but stylistic.
Mm-hmm. And this is the way Russia is heading. So I was going to ask you about the future. So it seems very negative. So journalists are getting more and more used to the amount of threats, especially online. It's just a part of your everyday life, basically. And at the same time, Russia is going in an even more patriarchal direction.
It's very superficial. Anyway.
How would you stop this development then? How would you
change the government, probably. Yep.
I think it's important to understand again, I started with this point, that democracy and press freedom as part of democracy, it's not a gift, it's not weather, it's our business, personal business of each of us. And when we started, it's very unpleasant. You know, it's very boring sometimes, and people sometimes are very lazy. They could be great journalists, but to protect even their labor rights, I know dozens of examples, they would never go and ask why and don't do
why
this
there's
and
no
do this.
Salary for several months.
They never do that. So it's important to raise civil awareness and self-esteem, I'm sorry, by Russian journalists and Russian intellectuals. I think it's a starting point for making difference in our life. Mm.
That's very good final words, and I'm so happy to have had you in the studio today. There is so much more to talk about. How can we follow you? How can Swedish journalists follow you? You are on Facebook, Victoria?
I'm on Facebook. I'm Victoria Ivleva. Yeah. But I write in Russian.
Yes, but we can use Google Translate.
You can
maybe
use Google Translate. Oh, yeah, but there's something I have to say.
Yes.
Together with my old Swedish friend, Swedish journalist Ulla Tilgren, we are organizing Andrei Tarkovsky Days on Gotland.
Oh, wow.
On the 28th and 29th of June during the Bergman Week, because it's 30 years of the Ofret, when he shooted Ofret on Gotland, and it will be a big event. So if people want to see me in person, they're most welcome to go to Gotland.
That's perfect. You can get a great dose of culture. You can see the 30th anniversary of the sacrifice, and you can meet this brilliant journalist as well. So go to Gotland.
Go to Gotland.
Yeah. And I would like to add, because
with no submarines.
No, absolutely not.
Because I'm part of GAMAK, Global Alliance for Media and Gender. And we have fantastic Swedish colleagues from feminist perspective. And we hope to have a project together which will give opportunity for women journalists and all activists, women and men, interested in media democratic development to communicate, establish regular exchange online, and probably some practical face-to-face gatherings. I do hope we'll do it together with the European Federation of Journalists, and we are in the process, so I do hope we'll meet again.
I hope so, and actually me and my colleague who's not here today, I'm doing this all by myself, we would love to do something like that, just a meet-up, and maybe I could go on a summer transfer to Moscow.
Fantastic,
why not?
Why not? It's very close, 2 hours to fly.
Send me there, and we'll see if I come back live.
35 minutes. We are hour 35 minutes away only. Yeah.
It feels like a universe away sometimes. I'm too glad that we got this perspective. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey there.
Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.